Now, it's time for another edition of
Cannonball!
The Cannons Blue Jackets Roundtable.
Here's Nash stepping in by one. Score! Right in!
Oh, what's up, everybody? It's DP here, and it's time for another edition of the Roundtable. And I'm sorry to put you through that intro, but I haven't had a chance to change it. And honestly, since we're doing a podcast this week, I don't see any more fitting way to introduce it. But so here we are, and as always, I'm joined by the venerable duo of Matt Wagner and Mike McLean. Matt, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing okay here. We're adjusting to a brave new world.
Yeah, not doing too bad. Interesting to see how things are going to shake out for the rest of the summer into the training camp. But
yeah, well, let's dispense with the formalities and get right into obviously the big story, which would be Rick Nash being traded to the Rangers for Artem Anisimov, Brandon Dubinsky, Tim Erickson, and a first-round pick. I'll just throw it out there. What are your initial thoughts on the trade? We'll start with you, Matt.
Honestly, I realize there are people that still think, oh, is this really the right value? Is this the right deal? But I think this was a pretty good outcome. You know, maybe it's not an absolute home run, but I think this was a pretty solid double or triple for Scott Housen. We got some guys that I think will make a really good impact on not just the on-ice product, but I think they're the kind of players we're looking for to help with reshaping things in the locker room for the attitude of the team.
Okay, and Mike, what about you?
Well, I mean, you know, Matt's bang on, but I think the biggest thing is the transition from Rick Nash and everybody else to a group of guys who each bring their own element to the team, you know, like Dubinsky and Anisimov. I mean, that they're going to be part of the system rather than spare parts, you know, to the Rick Nash show. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest, you know, sort of boosts to the Jackets is the fact that they will be able to develop this long-awaited identity that they seemingly never had. I think that Richards has the guys there now in place that can grow together, and this identity can finally be formed. And I mean, you know, getting Tim Erickson in the deal as well, I mean, that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, personally, boom or bust. Although all signs point to it being, you know, a very good addition to the organization. But I think, like I said, the biggest thing, rather than the players coming back in the Nash deal, is just the you know, psyche around the team changing. So I think it's going to be good in the future.
Yeah, and I tend to agree that probably the biggest upshot is twofold. One is that we don't have to hear about it anymore. It's done. It's over with. You know, we can Monday quarterback it to death, but the important thing is we don't have to hear about it every day. And honestly, I think the other benefit will be that the change in the leadership group is going to be very noticeable. I think we saw that start to happen after the trading deadline, when it was pretty obvious that Nash kind of took a step back and some other guys took a step forward. And so, you know, this is going to sound bad the way I say it, but with Nash out of the way, I think that it really opens it up for guys to really put their stamp on the team. So that's my hope, is that, you know, I tend to agree with you guys with the return. I think that given all the parameters, you know, with Nash's contract and the list and you know, the whole press conference at the deadline, I think they got about as much as they could have gotten. And I do like that guys that are coming back are all defensively responsible guys. And I think that contributes to the identity of the team. So with that having all been said, let's look at the roster as it stands now. First question to you, Mike, is it safe to assume that this is pretty much the roster we're going to see in training camp, or do you think that there's more coming on the horizon?
Well, I mean, you're still seeing some, you know, Jonathan Bernier rumors. So whether or not, you know, a deal can happen in terms of improving the goaltending, I mean, that remains to be seen. But I think in terms of the forwards and defense, I think that's pretty well. Like, the players are in place. There's going to be some competition for spots, obviously, especially on defense. You know, there's really eight guys that could step in and play every night, maybe even nine if you count Dalton Prout. But yeah, I mean, I'd say you're looking at this is going to be the team. And even if there is that upgrade with Bernier, I mean, what do you do with Mason? Does LA take him back? Do you put him on waivers and hope he gets claimed, or send him out to Springfield if he doesn't get claimed or what have you? I think the plan right now is probably for the team to go into camp as is. But you never know. I think goaltending might be the only thing that could be changed before then.
Matt, do you think that given all we talked about in terms of forging an identity and you know, in many ways you can look at the Nash deal. Obviously, you know, picks were swapped and the Jackets sent back a very minor league prospect, if you want to even call him a prospect. But in terms of their near NHL future, they kind of did a 3-for-1 swap. Does it make sense for Housen to continue, you know, and obviously 3 first-round picks as well, to continue to stockpile assets and not make any more moves before training camp? Or is there really, in your eyes, a spot on this roster that's so glaringly weak that they need to go out and address it before camp?
Well, I'm not sure if I'd use the phrase glaringly weak, but I would agree with Mike that if there was one more change to be made, I would think it would be in goaltending. I do think we're in a position of strength right now with our blue line. We have a lot of talent there, and potentially maybe somebody could be involved in some kind of deal. I think it's also worth considering, like you mentioned, we have stockpiled some picks here for what's going to be a fairly deep draft right now, according to most scouts. Maybe there's something to play with. You know, maybe that pick from New York, maybe that pick from LA, especially, you know, if we're interested in Bernier, if not, you know, you throw something in there. But those are the big issues, because I think in terms of how the roster looks, I like a lot of the players we've got, but I'd really like to see how we're going to be using them. We've got a lot of guys who I think suddenly could fill out the top six in a way we weren't expecting on, you know, July 1st. And I'd really like to see how we're going to try to put them together.
Okay. We talked about the, you know, the upcoming draft. Let's take a moment and look back at the draft this past June here. Obviously, we talked about the blue line and the move that the Jackets made, obviously, was to take Ryan Murray when many people were maybe hoping they'd take one of the forwards like Galchenyuk or Forsberg or somebody like that. Once, Matt, we'll start with you. Once Yakupov is off the board, do you think Ryan Murray was the safe pick or was he the best pick?
I think kind of both. Don't get me wrong, I liked Alex Galchenyuk. I would have been very happy seeing him coming into Columbus. But everybody that I spoke to, and I was in the lucky position of being able to go to the draft, pretty much everybody said that if Yakupov went to Edmonton, it had to be Murray. The talent level was just so high on him. And there was a reason that everybody was interested in the few trade offers Scott Housen got were trying to grab Murray with that overall pick. So I think he made the right call. He got the best player, and he got a guy that I think could very easily be a key piece going forward.
Mike, along the lines of strengthening the back end, the next two picks after Murray were spent on goaltenders, both of whom are pretty highly regarded and went pretty high in the CHL import draft. Does this signify to you that the club is looking to change their identity and looking to rebuild, or I guess reshape, to borrow Housen's word, this team in a different way than they've done in the past?
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, goaltending, you know, throughout the organization, I mean, it was thin. So, you know, after Murray, you can tell the plan focused then on improving the depth of goaltending and talent in the goaltending pipeline. The fact that they took back-to-back goalies, I absolutely loved that they went that route, especially given, you know, who else was available and what other kind of players were available. I know specifically with Oscar Dansk, he seemed a lot more gung-ho prior to the import draft, when it seemed like London was a foregone conclusion. But now that he's, you know, not going to be, you know, a member of the Knights, he's going to be with the Erie Otters, who are, you know, they've been a pretty poor team for a long time. I mean, I think that could change things. He seems to be a little less committed, just based off the interviews that we've seen. So, I mean, I think it'd be great for his development in the Canadian Hockey League. It's always, in my opinion, the best route to the NHL. So it remains to be seen if he shows up in the CHL or stays over in Europe. But if he does, I think we potentially have a stud. I compare him a lot to Jacob Markstrom, and I'm not the only one to do that. Jacob Markstrom in Florida, they considered him to be one of the best, if not the best, goalie not playing in the NHL right now. And I think we might see a similar situation with Dansk, you know, maybe even next year or a couple years from now, depending on his development, of course. But, you know, Korpisalo, another great goaltender, but he's in a similar situation. He's going to be playing on a very poor Western Hockey League team. So sometimes you see these goalies moved, you know, in terms of the junior trade deadline. So they move to a bigger club as those clubs are going to a Memorial Cup run or on a Memorial Cup run. So that would be beneficial for development because winning is always the best sort of tool in a player's development. But I think, yeah, just overall, adding those two goalies, that was huge for the organization.
Okay, well, and we talked about maybe making a weakness in the organization a strength, because with those two guys added, Anton Forsberg, and then, you know, even Alan York, Bobrovsky, you know, there are at least some names in the pipeline in the goaltending area. And then we've also talked about the blue line. So looking ahead to camp, I want to talk about, you know, strengths and weaknesses of this club, and maybe not even from the standpoint of specific units, but as this team is currently constructed, Mike, when you see them take the ice for their opening night, what are the areas of the game that you expect them to be good at, and what are the areas that you might see struggle a little bit?
Well, I think just based on looking at the roster on paper, I mean, you got a lot of two-way guys, you know, with Umby and Foligno. And I think what you're going to see is a team that will excel in the penalty kill, should excel in the penalty kill. They'll be a good defensive team. You know, there's going to be a lot of low-scoring games, hopefully, providing the goaltending does their bit. But I think you're going to see less of the flash and I have a lot more of just the hard work. And you're going to probably see the identity formed early where teams are going to know that, yes, Columbus is probably going to be one of the weaker teams in the league, but you're going to have a hard time facing them, especially at Nationwide Arena. You're going to get a real game out of them. And I think that's where they're going to excel is the effort department, the physicality, the defensive awareness department. I think they're going to struggle to score goals. I think that's kind of obvious. But then again, if the team gels in the right way, you know, Scott Housen said recently they have a handful of players who they believe are 15 to 20 goal scorers, and they almost expect that from them. And if they get that sort of distributed wealth in terms of the goal scoring, you know, I think that they could surprise. But, I mean, it's still going to be a tall order to, you know, produce a lot of goals. There won't be too many, you know, 5-1, 5-2 games. I think you're going to see a lot of low-scoring games. And in terms of struggles, I you know, you have to look at the goaltending and just wonder. I mean, based on Bobrovsky and Mason's seasons last year, you got to have some concern and think that, you know, there could be, you know, some struggles there just based on recent history. But the defense in front of them is much improved. The forward units defensively, much improved. So I think that the scenarios that could take place, like the gloomy scenarios where you see like the goaltenders getting shelled on a nightly basis, I think those days are behind, hopefully, but it remains to be seen.
I love how you qualify that. yeah, exactly. So Matt, one of the things we've kind of touched on and that I personally think has been a weakness in the past, but may actually be a strength on this team is the group that is going to be stepping up into the leadership vacuum now that Nash moved on. And I wanted to get your take, because you, like I, have spent some time in the dressing room after games and after practices. You know, just how you feel the dynamic has changed and you know, what your expectations are for the presumed new leadership. I think we've all kicked around the names as to who the new captain might be, but I think it's probably going to be, you know, one of three or four guys, and the other two will be, you know, not far behind with A's on their sweaters. So I want to get a sense from you of, you know, how you think the dynamics in the dressing room have changed and what we might see from this new group.
Well, I do sincerely believe that this is the death knell to the country club. you know, we always heard talk that some of that managed to stick around despite coaching and despite some personnel turnover. And I think it really came down to that Nash was, for better or for worse, a permissive captain towards that. And I think the fact that some of the guys who are part of the leadership group now, you know, not just RJ Umberger, but, you know, Vinny Prospel, who called out the team for their practice habits within a week of being here, Dubinsky and Anisimov, these are guys that have been playing for John Tortorella. I mean, that's a coach who has no off switch. And if they play and like they practice, I think we're going to see a lot of hard work from them. There's going to be a lot of just hard work earns you wins. It earns you ice time. It's going to earn you just respect from the teammates. And I think everybody who's considered part of the leadership group and considered the likely candidates for the A's and the C are all guys who have either bought into that or have been living by that. And I think they'll just keep reinforcing that here. And the one thing I would also point out that I'm really looking forward to that I don't think people are quite keyed on yet is looking at the way our puck possession and our transition game, I think, is going to shape up. We've already got a blue line that's really good at making that first pass. But when you look at the way that guys like Foligno, Dubinsky, and Anisimov play, these are all guys that are really talented at moving the puck around, keeping possession, working the boards, and taking it away from the opponents. I think that's going to be something that people might be pleasantly surprised with.
Very good. And it's kind of a tangential but follow-up question for you, Mike. Columbus had its history with Russian players, and conversely, I think no one would argue the fact that when Nikita Nikitin was brought here in a trade, the fact that he immediately got to play with and spend time with Fedor Tuten was probably a huge benefit. And then one of the things that actually struck me in our trade post, there was a Rangers fan who came on and mentioned something about Anisimov really needing that Russian support system. And it got me to thinking both about him, but also about Bobrovsky, since his main Russian support in Philadelphia was the batshit crazy Ilya Brizgalov. So I actually am wondering if you think that a player like Anisimov might see a jump like Nikitin, where he has that support system, he has some people that he's familiar with, and, you know, maybe develop a little on-ice chemistry. Obviously, I know that those guys are blue liners and he's a forward, but if that might be a similar jump to the way we saw Nikitin. I think when Nikitin came in, nobody would have expected him to have the impact that he had. And I've wondered how much of that, you know, since we're talking about culture and atmosphere, help a guy like Anisimov.
Well, I think, I mean, you just got to look at these guys. I mean, they're young guys. They're moving, you know, generally by themselves to the other part of the world, the other side of the world, whole new culture. And I mean, that's a difficult thing in and of itself. And then they have to perform on the ice, you know, to, you know, NHL standards. I mean, that's a lot to ask. And I mean, these guys obviously have lives outside of the game. And if they're struggling outside of the game, you know, because they're struggling with the culture, with even if it comes down to food or what have you, I mean, that those struggles are going to, you know, affect the on ice play and everything. So without getting too dramatic about it, I mean, it's good to have, you know, a group, like a support group, almost like you mentioned. And in terms of the Columbus roster, I mean, Bobrovsky and Anisimov, two young Russians, I mean, they, you know, they can come in, they'll already be, you know, like you say, Tuten and Nikitin in place. And then not that they would become like some Russian clique or anything, but, you know, when there's stuff off the ice or what have you, I mean, they can work through it together. I mean, Tuten can be a mentor for these guys. I mean, there's so many variables when it comes to the off the ice stuff. You know, it's great that the support group's there. And I mean, these are also, you know, players who are important cogs of the team, you know, so you want to make sure that they're happy, comfortable, you know, coming to work happy, so to speak. And yeah, I think the fact that there's already the culture in place with the Russian blue liners, I mean, I think that's going to help the new guys, you know, immensely.
Excellent.
I would also, this is a little bit of a spoiler for something that's going on the site tomorrow.
What?
But Mike and I have been chatting a little bit with Joe Fortunato, who is the head blogger at the Blue Shirt Banter, which is SB Nation's New York Rangers source for all your Ranger news. Thank you.
You're
for the
welcome.
Plug.
You're welcome. Yeah,
nice little plug there. But we've been having a little Q&A, and some of that's going to go up on the site tomorrow. And one thing that I did ask him about was how he felt about Anisimov adjusting to Columbus. And his thought was, you know, this is a guy with a really good head on his shoulders. He managed to go into New York with no real good English skills, not very big Russian community in the room, and really got in there, got settled in, and managed to sprout in that environment. And he actually thought that coming to Columbus, and especially with having some countrymen and people that he could be a little more comfortable with the language barriers and stuff in the room, might be something that really helps him burst onto the scene and helps him get comfortable a lot faster.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, that's something to look forward to read. I think we've come to the point in the podcast, without getting too long-winded for every, where we have to talk about expectations. I think you both have kind of touched on it, that I don't think anyone expects that this is all of a sudden a playoff team. But the metaphor that I keep coming back to is that, in my opinion, I feel like when Craig Patrick came in, and you know, you had the confluence of guys like Prospel and Wisniewski and Jack Johnson kind of injecting that new "this is unacceptable" kind of mentality. I feel like they kind of tore the house down and are starting to build it back as this really gritty sandpaper, tough team to play against. And in terms of them being a playoff team, I look at it as, okay, in terms of a house, they've poured the slab and they've got the basement walls. Maybe some studs are up. But at this point, it's not really a house that you can live in. And so my expectations are going in is just to see some work being done on that house, to really get a feel for what things are going to look like, you know, maybe 2-3 years from now, to build that culture baseline. And, as they go forward, then they can maybe sprinkle in some talent that will fit into that established culture. And having said all of that, I'm curious how you guys are looking at training, what your expectations are, not only for the team, but maybe for some specific players, as you know, some of the younger guys like Murray and like Cam Atkinson and Ryan Johansson. So Mike, I'll start with you. General expectations.
Well, as I said earlier, I think the Jackets are in for a long year, but I think that the difference will be, like last year, for example, there was so much hope, so much hype around the team that every loss, you know, was especially painful. Now this season, obviously the expectations are lower. So I think knowing that and knowing that the team is actually finally going in the right direction, and you can already see before they even, you know, hit the ice, you can see that there's a theme amongst the roster. You know, you can see that this group is going somewhere. Like there's an end in sight, you know, to the futility, so to speak. And but that said, I think that, you know, another year whereby you see the team finish, you know, low in the standings, earn a high draft pick. I mean, if they were going to ever do it, next season's a good year to do it. And like Matt said earlier, next year's draft is looking like, you know, the best one in a decade since 2003 with the super draft. So, the idea of filling a roster with young two-way players, having a young, talented defense, and then if you add next year, say, a Nathan MacKinnon up front, that would seem to me like the final piece to the current puzzle. So I don't think we're looking at a 3-4 year rebuild. I think we're looking at a transition year this year, hopefully get that high pick again next year, ideally Nathan MacKinnon. And I'm not even speaking just biased because I'm from Halifax and he's the best Moosehead to basically ever suit up. But he seems to me like if you had this one dynamic piece up front, you've already got the pieces on the back end. that should be, combined with the goaltenders that we drafted this year, I think that that'll be your team, you know, and that'll be, you know, 2 years from now, you'll start to see the results of that, and maybe even 3 years, they're a contender. So I think it's not going to be a complete overhaul of the next few years, but this year is going to be a transition year. It's going to be tough. I think you're going to see fewer jettison moves at the deadline. I mean, I hate to say it before the guy even plays the game, but Adrian O'Coin might be an option, just work given his veteran status. He might be a player that moves out. But otherwise, I don't think you're going to see a lot of roster movement. I think they're going to let this team build as is, let them go through their struggles, which they'll probably have this year just based on the lack of goal scoring available. I think it's just going to be, like I said, transition year with some struggles. But you're going to be surprised pleasantly by some players that leave. But I think it's going to be a difficult year.
Are there any players specifically you wanted to highlight as to guys maybe that take a bigger step forward than others?
Well, I think this is a year that Derek Brassard and Ryan Johansson, I mean, I think that they need to establish themselves as the top two centers. Brass doesn't have the winger in Nash, you know, but you put him with, say, you know, Umberger and Atkinson, and he has the talent to anchor that line, be the guy, you know, the number one pivot. And I think it's time for him to make that step, and I think he will. I think he's out of Nash's shadow, and we might see Brassard be, you know, the leading scorer of this team. I'd like to see Umby sort of keep his, you know, 25-goal pace. I mean, I know he had some struggles at times last year, but especially early. I think, you know, a full season of Wiz, you know, would be huge, not to mention Jack Johnson. I want to see what he's capable of with a full season. Yeah, I mean, even a guy like, you know, Derek McKenzie, he just does his thing, you know, he's dependable fourth line center, but I think you're going to see him take on sort of more of a visible role in terms of the penalty kill, the leader of the bottom six, so to speak. But I think the biggest players are Brassard and Johansson. Those guys I see as being the guys needing to and likely will take the big step.
Okay, Matt, what about you? General expectations and then maybe a couple of players that you're kind of highlighting or focusing on.
I would say I don't want to get people's hopes up. You know, I don't want to blow a bunch of stuff and then have it turn out, oh, hey, this exploded.
You mean like when Jeff said they could win the division last year? Jeff Little?
Yeah, you know, kind of like that. But I would say with the mindset of players we have coming in and what we've seen from this locker room, I expect a team that's going to go out and you're going to see them hustle every night. You know, win or lose, you're obviously going to see the work. You're obviously going to see the effort. And I think that's something worthwhile. I think that's going to be something that people are going to really enjoy. I personally think that I agree and don't agree about what you said about Ryan Johansson and Derek Brassard needing to be the top two centers. I think the opportunity's there, but I actually wouldn't mind if we see Brandon Dubinsky come out and say, I'm a top six player, I'm going to earn a spot there, and I'm going to keep it. And I don't think that would be a bad thing at all.
So what then with Brassard and Johansson, if, let's say, Dubinsky does, and even Anisimov as well, either of those guys, let's say they come in and step in to take up one of the top six center roles, then what do you do with Johansson or Brassard?
Well, I mean, we already saw that Johansson seemed to do just fine on the wing at times last year. Now, admittedly, that's not necessarily where Housen and Todd Richards always wanted him, but he did fine. You know, he played well there. And I think, you know, if the worst case scenario is we have a line that's, let's say, a line of Prospel, Dubinsky, and Johansson.
That's
a pretty nice line, and it gives you some nice face-off capability one way or the other. I think that's a good combination. And I'm really interested in that battle we're going to see for that last defensive spot. Whether the team rolls with 6D, whether they roll with 7D, you know, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of guys fighting for that last spot. And I want to see what Ryan Murray does. I really want to see what Tim Erickson does. I think those two are going to be, I have a feeling they're going to get along well, but we're going to see the competition. And I'd really want to see what John Moore does, because he's basically been told, step up or ship out. There are guys now who can take your spot if they have the, if you don't do everything you can to earn it.
Yeah, and I agree completely with the defense. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about the other day was Nick Holden was re-signed. And to be honest with you, I thought that last year's one-year contract was his sort of last chance deal. But I think the fact that he was signed, I think that that might be an indicator that the team isn't necessarily going to use that seventh defense spot, you know, on one of the young guys. I could see a situation where if Holden plays well enough in camp, you can see like the number six spot is given to the guy like of the group you mentioned, Murray, Erickson, Moore, Savard, even Prout, you know, one of the young guys. And I think you'll see like a guy like Holden or even maybe, you know, Holden, no coin switching. I mean, I'm just throwing Holden's name out there just based on the fact that he was signed to this second last chance deal. But if that's the case, if that does happen, I mean, you're looking at a Springfield blue line that is just absolutely, you know, phenomenal. But then again, as we talked about earlier, you might get into, you know, trade scenarios. Because if you have, you know, Erickson and Moore and Savard and Prout down in the AHL, you know, that's a lot of talent that's not, you know, like that could be in the NHL. And, of course, there's injuries and everything else. But I agree with you, Matt. I think that will be the biggest glamour battle in training camp is for that last defense spot to play with O'Coin.
Do you guys think that the fact that Murray can't play in the AHL gives him a little bit of an inside track to making the Blue Jackets? Since I can't imagine they'd really like to send him back to Everett for a whole nother year.
Well, go ahead, Matt.
I'd say it certainly is going to give him an edge for those first nine games. It's going to be a chance for him to kind of prove what he can or can't do. And I think I wouldn't be shocked at all for those first nine games for him to get as much playing time as he can. But at that point, you know, at the same time, if they decide, you know, we're not seeing you showing us enough, you know, maybe you're not hungry enough at this point. And that said, I really expect him to be. I expect him to come in and be hungry and really push for something here. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't, but you know, it is a weird transition. Not everybody takes quite as well to it as you'd hope. Maybe he comes back up, you know, maybe they do say, okay, you need, you know, we need another year. We'll give you the nine games. We'll give you a ride back to Everett and we'll kind of pick up from there. But I think it's a short-term advantage, but he's got to make it into a long-term advantage if he wants to stay here.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing too, I mean, you got to remember that Murray missed a majority of last season. And I mean, he is considered to be NHL ready, and I'm with you, Matt. I think he will really take the bull by the horns and go for that last spot on defense. I think he will earn it. As for having a leg up just due to his contract status, you'd like to think that the coach doesn't care about that and probably doesn't. And you'd also like to think that the GM won't go, you know, down and say, hey, listen, you know, this guy's contract status, so we kind of want you to put him a little ahead of the other guys. You want to think that Richards will select the top six, seven defensemen that deserve to be there. If Murray's one of those guys and earns it, you know, legitimately, so be it. I don't think that, I mean, other than the nine-game window that the players have, I think that he'll be there regardless for that. Whether or not he's playing every night is a different story. You know, like those games might be spread out. But I think at the end of the day, another year in Everett wouldn't be a terrible thing just based on the fact that he didn't have a full season there last year. But again, in my opinion, I think he's almost a near lock for the team just based on everything we've seen from him so far.
Do you, and I'm not really trying to bait you both with these Murray questions, but does Hartsburg coming behind the bench, does that also work in his favor, or do you think that actually makes it tougher on him?
I think it's going to be one where it makes it a little tougher because Hartsburg knows what he can and can't do, and he's going to recognize when he's pushing all out and when he's not.
Yeah. Yeah, he can't get away with anything, basically, you know, for lack of a better term. Because the Hartsburg's got the book on him already. So, I mean, that's and you know, he's probably already, you know, given Richards and Acton the full detail on Murray. So they know what he's all about, you know, before he even steps on the ice. So I think they'll be looking for, you know, if there are negatives to his game, they'll be looking for those. And they do have the inside track because of Hartsburg.
Well, and that actually opens up another question that'll be for another time, just because we've already wasted enough time as it is. But obviously all the changes to the coaching staff were, aside from, you know, trading your franchise player, were probably, in my mind, some of the biggest moves that were made, because they issued first-timers for experience. But that may have to wait for another podcast, which we will have to be a little more diligent about doing. But thank you guys for all of your insights, and thank you for listening. We will be back hopefully sooner rather than later, and we'll just count down until training camp. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, take care, guys.
Definitely. Have a good night.
This has been another edition of the Cannons Blue Jackets Roundtable. Thanks for listening.